Well, we spent some time talking about the sovereignty of God and trying to understand some of what that means. This morning, we're going to talk about God declaring His sovereignty, declaring His name. And the place that I'd like to direct your attention to this morning is in the 9th chapter of the book of Exodus. Oh, forgot to turn the microphone on. So we're going to start in Exodus 9 at verse 13, and we're going to read a little bit about the seventh plague that God brought on the Egyptians when he wanted the Egyptians to let his people go. His people were slaves in Egypt at the time. And God wanted Pharaoh to let his people go, and Pharaoh, of course, said, no, I'm not going to let them go. Well, this is the way it's described when God does some things to convince Pharaoh to let his people go. Beginning at verse 13, it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Rise up early in the morning, present yourself before Pharaoh, and say to him, Thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For this time I will send all my plagues upon you yourself and on your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. By now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. But for this purpose I've raised you up, to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. You are still exalting yourself against my people and will not let them go.'" There have already been six plagues. God has done enormous, just outstanding things. Pharaoh says, "No, I'm not going to let your people go." This is what God says. "Behold, about this time tomorrow, I will cause very heavy hail to fall, such as has never been in Egypt from the day it was founded until now. Now, therefore, send, get your livestock and all that you have in the field into safe shelter. For every man and beast that is in the field and is not brought home will die when the hail falls on them. Whoever feared the Lord, the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh, hurried his slaves and his livestock into the house. But whoever did not pay attention to the word of the Lord left his slaves and his livestock in the field. The Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand toward heaven, so that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, on man and beast, and every plant of the field in the land of Egypt.' Moses stretched out his staff toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down to the earth. The Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. There was hail and fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail, very heavy hail, such as had never been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. The hail struck down everything that was in the field and in all the land of Egypt, both man and beast. The hail struck down every plant of the field and broke every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the people of Israel were, there was no hail." God wanted Pharaoh to let his people go. And Pharaoh absolutely refused. The record says that Pharaoh hardened his heart. Now, a lot of people misunderstand that. It's not in my mind, it's not all that difficult to understand. But I want to begin in verse 15. Now, this is from the King James translation, because I want to pick out some words that are significant that we're going to find, that we're going to define. Exodus 9 at verse 15 says, "Now I will stretch out my hand that I may smite thee and thy people with pestilence, and thou shalt be cut off from the earth. And in very deed for this cause I have raised thee up to show in thee my power, and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth." Now let's go back and let's look at some of these words because they're important. The first one I want to look at is the word "show." It's Old King James translation, or Old King James spelling, S-H-E-W, but it's "show." From the Hebrew word that you see there on the board, and if you think I can't pronounce Greek, I really can't pronounce Hebrew. It's, according to Strong's numbering system, H7200. Now, Brown, Driver, and Briggs, this probably the preeminent lexicon of Old Testament words in the Hebrew, said this word means to see, or to look at, or inspect, or perceive, or consider. If you drop down, I'm skipping over parts of the definition because I want to get to the part that I want to focus on this morning. He says one aspect of this is to look at, to see, to regard, to look after, to see after, to learn about, to observe, to watch, to look upon, to look out, or to find out. To see or observe or consider or look at, give attention to, discern or distinguish. It's a lot more. When he says, "I'm going to show you something," it's a lot more than "I'm just going to put it up here on the screen and you're going to look at it for a minute." We're going to take some time here so that you can discern some important truths. That's what God is doing. He's showing something to Pharaoh and to the rest of the world, I might add. He says, "What I'm going to show you is my power." Again, there's the word up there. It's the Hebrew word 3581. Brown, Driver, and Briggs says it means this. Sometimes the general definition is strength or power or might. And he says sometimes it's human strength. We understand that. Sometimes it's the strength of angels. That I've never seen. So that it just kind of above me. Sometimes it's seeing the power of God. Can't imagine what it must have been like to be in the garden when God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. That's power beyond anything I can imagine. We can do some marvelous things. We can rearrange the elements that God put here, and we can come up with a lot of great machines. But we can't make light. Well, I switch on the switch in the back and electricity flows and these lights light up. But I can't create the very thing called light. That's enormous. We talk about the strength of animals. Talk about strength or the produce or the wealth of the soil, what we can produce. And there's a lot of discussion about how ownership of land gives great power. Interestingly, says it also refers to a small reptile, probably some kind of lizard that was unclean. I don't know how that word could refer to those two things, but that's what he says. Then he says, what I'm going to show you is my name. Again, there's the word. Definition is this. It's my name or my reputation. My fame, my glory. Sometimes it could be a name, like Yahweh is the designation of God. That's his personal name, like Mark or James or Matt or Susie. Those are all designations. Sometimes it's a memorial or a monument. And Mark talked about how important monuments are. Then the last word that I want to think about is the word declared. That's one of those words that we think we pretty well understand. But there's a lot of meaning in this word. There it is in the Hebrew up there. You can see it on the screen. Brown, Driver, and Briggs says it means to count. Interesting. To declare means to count. Or to recount. So I count it and I tell you what I have counted. Or to relate. Now, he gives a number of different meanings, but I want to drop down to where he says it means to account or rehearse or declare. And specifically, I want to focus on the idea that it means to count correctly or to count accurately. And then he says it. This word would refer to an enumerator, a muster officer. Matt will probably tell you what muster officer means. I have really very little idea, but it's a military word. A secretary or a scribe. It's an enumerator. It's a learned man. Now, my dad was an accountant. My dad balanced his checkbook to the penny. And if he couldn't make his checkbook balance, he knew something was wrong. Somebody had counted the money wrong. And he would struggle and struggle and struggle, and he always found where the mistake was. Sometimes it was his mistake, sometimes it was a mistake of the bank. But that report that you get from the bank that you use to reconcile your checkbook, that's an accounting. And the whole purpose behind everything that my dad did was to make sure that was an accurate accounting. Now, I'm not like him. I get my bank statement, and if it agrees with what I think I have in the bank, then so be it. And if it doesn't, then I accept the bank's version of how much money I have. That's probably not the best way to go about doing it. Because I could get cheated out of money, couldn't I? And I, which is more probably the case, I'm wrong. But to declare something is to give an accurate accounting. Well, record says in Exodus, multiple times, after every one of the plagues, Pharaoh hardened his heart. Sometimes it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. How does that work? In Pharaoh's mind, his authority could not be questioned. He was the most powerful man alive. That Moses would come in before him and present to him a demand was to question his authority. And that could not be countenanced. Here was some God who had the audacity to tell him what to do. And that fact that he had that audacity to tell him what he ought to do made Pharaoh mad. It wasn't that God did anything special to harden Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh had a certain world view. He was the most important man on the face of the earth, and no one could tell him what to do. And every time God said, "Let my people go," Pharaoh got madder. God didn't have to do anything special. Pharaoh was just acting like a child who says, "You're not the boss of me." And believe me, I had two daughters, both of whom learned to love that phrase, "You're not the boss of me." And it wasn't that I had done something that caused them to not want to obey. Just the very fact that I expected them to obey, just the very fact that I told them to obey, hardened their heart. And that's the way it was with Pharaoh. He's become like a little child who says, "You're not the boss of me." And the more you tell him that he has to do something, the madder he gets. Now, this is a meme that I ran across as I was doing some research getting ready for this discussion this morning. And I think this meme pretty well summarizes Pharaoh and his attitude about God. The meme says, "I was an atheist until I realized that I am God." And that's the way a lot of people get. An atheist until they realize that they themselves are God. And you know, that attitude that Pharaoh had still persists. Most clearly it's stated by Pharaoh, I suppose, in Exodus the 5th chapter, verse 9. This is the way he says it. "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." Who is the Lord? Who does God think he is to tell me, the most powerful man on the face of the earth, that I have to do something? Paul and Peter warned about people who think that they're gods, think that they're lords. In Acts the 19th chapter and at verse 13, beginning, we read about seven sons of Sceva. Now they thought that they were gods. They thought that they had the same power that God had. The record says it this way: "Some of the itinerant Jewish exorcists undertook to invoke the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, 'I adjure you by the Jesus whom Paul proclaims.'" Seven sons of a Jewish high priest named Sceva were doing this. But the evil spirit answered them, "Jesus, I know. Paul, I recognize. Who are you?" The man in whom was the evil spirit leaped upon them, mastered all of them, and overpowered them so that they fled out of the house naked and wounded. This became known to all the residents of Ephesus, both Jews and Greeks, and fear fell upon them all. The name of the Lord Jesus was extolled. Sadly, it happens even among Christians. In 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, Peter writes to elders. We're not talking about people that don't know better. But this is what Peter says in 1 Peter 5 at verse 1. I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker of the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that's among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Not domineering over those in your charge. The King James translation says, not as lords over God's heritage. We sometimes do that. We do it in our families. We have the care of our children, and we mistakenly begin to think that that means we're the Lord. And we're not. Husbands think that about their wives. Christians really do sometimes think that. Let me read you a case of a Finnish prosecutor. Finnish, as in Finland. Okay? I saw this on the 16th. A court in Finland heard final arguments this week in the prosecution of a member of parliament and a Lutheran bishop for expressing opposition to same-sex marriage. Charged under Finland's ethnic agitation law, and that's in quotations, are, well, there's that person's name. Pallavi, I have no idea how to pronounce that. A member of parliament who's also a medical doctor and a former interior minister and a Lutheran bishop, Juhana, can't pronounce the last name. Anyway, those two people face 2 years in prison if they're convicted. Ravili, who is 62, published a pamphlet in 2004 about the Bible's teaching on marriage. In 2019, she was on a radio program and tweeted a picture of a Bible passage. She is charged with 3 counts of violating Finland's ethnic agitation law. Authorities also charged the other person, Pajola, with 1 count of violating the law in connection with hosting the pamphlet that this other person had written on his church's website. And then there's this warning. This is from a commentator who writes about ministry issues. This idea of Christians being persecuted in America just for living out our faith is not so far-fetched. In fact, we've already seen it happen to Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop out of Colorado. A football coach in Washington State, Joseph Kennedy, being fired for praying after high school football games, thinking about all the surveillance going on about the persistent intrusion on our liberties. And it was just this last week that some in the government were encouraging people to rat out their mates, their spouses, who had the audacity to question what the government said. The prosecutor in the Finnish case said this, and this is what struck me. The Bible cannot overrule finish law. Finish law is the God. The prosecutor also said that the use of the word sin can be harmful. Early in the case, the prosecutor's office said that the statements that this Ravili had made violate the equality and dignity of homosexuals, so they transcend the boundaries of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. That prosecutor concluded this way. It's fine to have beliefs in the Bible as long as those beliefs stay between your ears. This is not freedom of religion. Western civilization is really, according to this commentator, the product of a Christian worldview. Sadly, there are people who want to be atheists, but they also want to be God. Well, as bad as that is, I've heard people say, I know what Jesus says, but I'm going to divorce my wife anyway. I'm going to be God. And you're not. You're not God any more than Pharaoh was. People who say, I will not forgive that person. And I must tell you, I struggle with this. There are some people who've hurt me very deeply. And I struggle with the concept of forgiveness. And I have been guilty of making this kind of a statement. I know that God expects me to forgive, but I will not do it. That's making myself God. I can't go there. God declared his name when the hail came. What was so spectacular about it? Finally, it was accurate. A lot of things have been said about God. A lot of things have been said to denigrate God. A lot of things have been said that are just not true. Don't believe things that are not true. If you want to know about a sovereign God, read the truth. Look at what God did. Look at what God said. And we'll help you do that. That's really our only plea to you. Look at what God said. If you've done that and you have concluded, accurately I might add, if you have concluded that God really is who he says he is, then submit to him. We'll help you to put him on in baptism. We'll help to put Jesus on in baptism. And we will together struggle to always obey God. Do you know sometimes it's really easy to think that somebody loves God when they don't? It's kind of like my puppy. I'm trying to get my puppy to learn to obey me. To learn that when I say no, that means no. And I'm not doing a very good job of that just yet. Right now I've got scratches all over my hands. And if you notice, I've even got a scratch on my nose. Sometimes it looks like we're making some progress. And I think maybe she's not really obeying me. She just wants to do that anyway. And the two of us want that to happen. And so it's hard to tell whether she's obeying me or she's just doing what she wants to do anyway. I can tell you when you learn the difference. It's when you have to go to the garden with Jesus. And you watch him as he says to his Father, "If it's possible, let this cup pass from me." He was facing crucifixion, a beating, scourging, dying on a cross. Clearly, that wasn't what he wanted. But he says, "Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." That's when you see the difference between two people who just happen to agree and one person who's submitting.